Welcome to the Unspoken Realms podcast, audio recordings of the official Magic the Gathering story, which can be found at dailymtg.com. The Dominaria storyline is going to start with episode 160 of Unspoken Realms, so for the next 2 weeks I'm going to jump back to some older stories again. Most of the main storyline of that block, with Jace solving the implicit maze and becoming the Living Guild Pact, takes place in the short novel The Secretist. Since the ebook is still for sale, I can't record it for you, but there were lots of short stories written for the Magic Story column back then as well, so I'll be reading some of those. Actually, the first Return to Ravnica story that was posted back then was In the Shadows of Prav, which is the story about Vraska's imprisonment by the Azorius Guild that I recorded for episode 145. This is Epic Experiment and Slaughter Games. Epic Experiment by Jenna Helland. Trenz adjusted his endotaxis goggles onto the bridge of his crooked nose.
Good morning, Experiment Day.
Blinking through the haze of hyperocular dust that wafted through the air, he sucked in a huge cone of it through his nostrils. Trenz enjoyed the scent of smoldering metal that wafted from the magnetic nitroxeter, his mana-charged contraption that filled the entire east wall. The early morning sun peeped through the cracked window, which overlooked the abandoned block of buildings that Trenz affectionately called the Empty Cup Row. He waved at the devoted clatch of Selesnya missionaries who had been picking away at the rubble, by hand, for months. At this rate, in 102.7 years, they'll have cleared a nice spot to plant a new guildry for their nascent community. Trenz surveyed his drafty workshop and felt as if he must burst with pleasure. Somewhere, miles away in the 10th district, the Firemind was probably reclining in his airy in Nivix, considering a million things at once. Trenz wished he could hold a fraction of the things in his mind that Niv-Mizzet pondered in the blink of an eye. Niv-Mizzet himself had bestowed this remote area of the city to Trenz as a playground for his exo-special experiments. Even before he was a full-fledged chemister, Trenz had attracted the dragon's attention when he created an Aetherprax tunnel from Nivix to the gates of Sunhome. Lately, the Firemind had been gifting Trenz with personal assignments that led him in directions that never would have occurred to him on his own. Yes, grand things were happening, and Trenz couldn't remember the last time he'd slept. There was simply too much to do to bother shutting one's eyes. And today was Experiment Day. Trenz would crack the Egg of Truth and lay it at the claws of his master. Trenz strapped on his Omni-Blast helmet and lowered the electroscope over his face. He spun the scope around the room, marveling at incredible detail. There were a mason's forgotten fingerprints along the vaulted ceiling. Yesterday's blood spots splattered across the toes of his reinforced boots. Trenz loved little details. It all added up to something grand. Experimentation without risk would lead nowhere. An explosion was just the art of a mind on fire. He strode across the warped floorboards and stood before the magnetic nitroxeter, an element negotiator of his own design. So small, so perfect. If it were a pet mouse, he would kiss it between its fuzzy little ears. Trenz sighed with happiness.
If this is thinking, I don't know what I was doing before, he thought happily.
His epic moment had arrived. He'd narrowed it down to 4 tests, each blossoming with potential. Each would yield gems of priceless information to deliver to the Airy. But only one was the right choice. But which? Choose wisely, Mr. Trenz. In the article, there are four links to the four different experiments so that the reader can choose which one they want to try first. There's the aerial antistasis chamber, spatial ectofractalizer, megathermal geolometer, and neural schizotrode. But for this episode, I'm just going to read through them one at a time. Aerial antistasis chamber. Trenz selected the aerial antistasis chamber. He fired up the mesium coils and stepped into the fire mist field generated by the chamber. The mist eddied around him, stinging his cheeks with tiny barbs. Beneath his feet, the floorboards trembled. Outside, the sky darkened and the wind gusted dramatically. A violent funnel of wind materialized outside his workshop window, much to the horror of the Selesnya missionaries who rushed to take cover in a culvert. The funnel tore through the abandoned block. It razed high-rise flats and demolished an empty Orzhov mission. Hordes of rebel-dwelling rats scurried for the drain as years of rubbish left by cruel squatters swirled through the air. As quickly as it appeared, the funnel disappeared and the sun returned. Trenz looked around his workshop in disappointment. A tornado of lightning-charged wind was not what he'd hoped for. Strangely, the Selesnyans were whooping outside his window. A large swath of the block was swept clear, as if a giant with a broom had taken sympathy on their mission. Joyful shouts of, "The seed! Get the seed!" drifted through the air as Trenz went back to the drawing board. Spatial ectofractalizer. Trenz selected the spatial ectofractalizer. Ever so carefully, he poured the purest ocular dust into the bolt hole. The dust began to glow faintly, which somehow made him sniffle. Inside the containment vial, the dust shuddered, clumped, and shuddered again. Trenz sneezed, and reality fragmented into beautiful shades of cobalt and puce.
"Oops," Trenz thought, "too much dust."
Meanwhile, deep in the bowels of the Undercity, two shadowy figures were having a heated discussion. As soon as the puce light hit them, they stepped back into the shadows. A white-haired man appeared out of nowhere, cursed loudly, and began stomping noisily up the cobblestones toward the surface. As he disappeared from sight, the startled pair looked at each other in amazement. A beautiful portal shimmered in front of them, and Mr. Taz was sure it would take them exactly where they needed to go.
"Well, Krenko,"
Taz murmured to the hook-nosed goblin standing beside him,
"getting into the Orzhov inner sanctum might not be as difficult as you initially believed."
Megathermal geolometer. Trenz selected the megathermal geolometer. Keeping his head way back, he tapped the geolometer against the supercharged mesium coils. Nothing happened. He blew off the dust bunnies and tapped it harder. Suddenly, spires of molten flame rocketed through the air. Superheated metal fragments rained down over the district and tore coin-sized holes in roofs for miles around. The sizzle of burning metal gave way to slow-rolling earthquakes that made the streets undulate like waves. The bright lights and thunderous racket attracted the attention of the Rakdos cultists. Nothing says celebration quite like widespread, random destruction. Blood witches stumbled out of Rick's Maddie. Pleasure clubs emptied all over the city. The roustabouts and spikers roused their reluctant neighbors, and soon the streets filled with merrymakers. Amid their frolicking, the cultists agreed they should do this every year, and thus the new festival of Fire, Rain, Bloodletting, Mayhem, Neighbor Appreciation Day was born. The show continued long into the night, even after Trenz threw the geolometer out the window and went to bed. Neural schizotrode. Trenz chose the neural schizotrode. He tightened the screws against his temples and waited expectantly. There was a jangle, followed by a frightened squeak. Air rushed in through his ears like his brain had turned into a suctionatronic device. His thoughts seemed to pulverize under the weight of some mental hammer.
"No," he cried, "I must not let the Firemind down."
Desperately, he raised his Zygon cuff and, suddenly, the room erupted in lightning and pure, unadulterated genius. He had chosen correctly, and the reward was in his electrified grasp at last. Slaughter Games by Trick Jarrett. Marita slammed the door and slammed down the crossbar. It landed with a solid thud, barring her family's door and protecting them from the Rakdos outside. The guild was on parade, filling the streets with a dreadful cacophony of dragging chains, mad cackling, and the screams of agony by those who were swept up in their gruesome marching carnival. Marita crumpled and fell with her back to the wall, reaching out to pull her two children close. She whispered soothing words to her terrified children, trying to reassure them that they were safe now from the monsters stomping past their home. The mob paraded by, filled with deranged glee. Homes, businesses, temples, and even government buildings closed and barred their doors as the vanguard of the Rakdos approached. It was a terrifyingly long procession, composed of almost all of the Rakdos Guild's ranks. Amidst the bloody parade, the carnival was in full swing with bladed stiltwalkers, a mobile aerial chain act, body-pierced high-flying trapeze artists, and other ghastly sights. Every member of the Rakdos carried a murderous grin, being deliriously happy, for today marked the beginning of their slaughter games. The competition had been announced as three of Rakdos's rings battled over a recently vacated territory, and to make the most of the conflict, it was put up as prize for this slaughter games. The slaughter games consume the guild for as long as it takes, until the victors stand bloodied but victorious. Only a fraction of the Rakdos followers will do the games. To do so is to put life and limb on the line. They willfully put their life at risk for the spectacle of the games out of devotion for their demonic leader. Derex had been a champion spiker for 4 years slaughter games, though the games aren't annual, so he actually had been a winner through 7 slaughter games, until last year when he was dethroned by an upstart from Massacre Girl's ring, Vildika, a tall and tightly corded female human, who got the killing blow on a particularly agile victim that had dodged Derek's deadly swing of the hammer, only to be caught by one of Vildika's bladed boots in a graceful spinning kick. Derek's found himself defeated and Vildika crowned champion for the year's games. Derek's previous ringleader was the very unusual Stroko, a goblin who devoted himself to Rakdos. Stroko had made good use of Derek's as a striker. He kept the little piece which benefited Stroko and caused the chaos which would further Stroko's goals. After Derek's was defeated, he was worthless to Stroko, and with great derision he insulted Derek's amidst a slaughter games feast. Derek's, outraged, rose to his feet so quickly that he knocked over the feast table, scattering food and drink everywhere. He tore off his vest that bore the sigil of Stroko's ring and threw it down before storming out. He would start his own ring. He left the tent alone. Many bristled at the poor treatment of Derek's, but none had been outraged enough to follow him during his exit from Stroker's ring. It had taken him some weeks, but he had grown his own upstart ring. Derek's had battled for territory and carved out a niche not too far from the festival grounds. Finally, the slaughter games had arrived once again, and Derek's now marched past Marita's door, his ring marching around him. He wore a vest with a sigil of his own on his broad shoulders. He hung chains of his status around his shoulders, using large links to intimidate all who beheld his already massive frame. Further, he carried his spiked hammer on one shoulder, with his other hand leading the chains of his ring's supplicants. Derek's may have been a spiker, a pierced titan towering over the members of his ring, but he had discovered he also had a good mind for business. As angry as he was at Stroko's insult, he had learned a good deal from him. As chaos and frivolity reigned among the cult's ranks, it was the higher-ups who were tasked with carefully managing it to the prosperity of all. It was up to the ringmasters to organize, fund, and let the carnival continue in order to please Rakdos himself. And though he did not appear, every ringmaster knew that Rakdos watched these games with interest. Because of this, Derek's hoped to find his ring elevated after they proved themselves at the slaughter games. Only a few weeks ago he had recruited Vildika away from Massacre Girl. She walked beside him now, head held proudly high. She wore a form-fitting and low-cut dress with rows of piercings on her delicate features. In just these few weeks since her arrival, Vildika had proved herself a valuable ally and confidant in the matters of the ring, and he had found himself falling for her. As the ringmaster, Derek's had begrudgingly chosen not to compete, instead allowing Vildika to represent his ring in the games. He bristled as he thought how he would be a spectator this year, but he also knew that it was for the best. He was earning Rakdos' approval through his work outside of the arena now. As the enormous archway into the festival grounds neared, he looked through its high arch and saw an apparent waterfall of blood. Animal, human, centaur, and perhaps merfolk, any being who had been swept up in the pregame activities, was now used to welcome Rakdos' followers to the slaughter games. Derek's grasped the spiked hammer in his massive fist and lifted it above his head as his ring entered the grounds, surrounded by shouts and jeers. Though the games were only for the strongest of wills, it drew countless onlookers. They stood on the edge of the grounds, quick to retreat and scatter for fear of suddenly finding themselves the latest plaything in the games. They had all come to see the horrifying games as they played out, and they were never disappointed. Derek's led his ring to the arena he had chosen for their camp, directing them as to where to set up their tents and hammer the stakes. Once the procession had finished and all the various rings were settled, dark had fallen on Ravnica. The fairgrounds were lit by numerous fires, and the normally loud and cacophonous guild had quieted somewhat as they prepared for the games the next day. The other ring members were gone, and it was just Derek's and Vildika sitting together next to the fire. Derek's sharpened his spiked hammer before slamming it down on the remnant carcass of the beast that had been their dinner, testing its point. Vildika had removed her boots and was reclining next to him, pricking her fingers absent-mindedly as she watched the blood well.
"Do you miss Massacre Girl?"
Derek's asked questioningly between strokes of the whetstone. He was honestly curious. She had joined him willingly, but he also knew that they had been close for many years.
"I mean her and her ring."
Showing little emotion, Vildika replied,
"Rarely."
And after a moment's pause, she added,
I joined your ring because it was clear that she no longer saw me as anything but a combatant in the games. A trophy. I was her trophy to parade around, not a member to share the carnival with.
Emotion had crept into her voice as she spoke, anger intermingling with sadness. Derek considered her response. It wasn't unsurprising. It was common for ringleaders to take their slaughter game victors and raise them onto a dais. Stroko had done the same to him for years, but in those times he had enjoyed it. He was celebrated, known, and he had whatever it was that he wanted. Except for closeness to anyone but Stroko. Oh, sure, he had companions to enjoy the bloody carnivals and circus, and he never wanted for much. But he had plenty of time to reflect back on who he had been and compare with who he was now.
Are you ready to compete tomorrow?
Derek still could not hide the fact he wished he was in the competition. Vildika's sharp laugh rang through the ring's tents.
Have you seen the spikers from other rings? They're pathetic. Even Erzadalt, that hulk that Rainier has been grooming for years. He's hardly ready, and I'll strike him down without a worry. It almost doesn't seem sporting this time around.
She pricked her index finger in three quick motions, watching the blood well before it slid down her finger into her palm. Derek nodded. He had felt the same way for many years, completely confident in his victory. And even last time he had been confident in his victory, at least until Vildika surprised everyone.
How much did you wager on me?
Curiosity clear in her voice. Ringleaders always made wagers with one another over the games. Sometimes for money, sometimes for people, and sometimes for promises.
More than I did on anyone else.
Derek had wagered across all of his combatants and games participants, but he had wagered the majority of his ring's stockpile on Vildika. A move his moneykeepers were none too happy with. Vildika pricked her finger one more time and clenched the bloody fingers into a fist. She allowed herself to smile. Tomorrow, the games would finally begin. Thank you for listening to the Unspoken Realms podcast. The original stories may be found, along with companion artwork and more of the official Magic the Gathering story, at dailymtg.com. To support the show, go to patreon.com/unspokenrealms. For feedback, email unspokenrealmspodcast@gmail.com, tweet @unspokenrealmsp, or go to facebook.com/unspokenrealmspodcast.